Shannon. Hello, how are you? You know, it's Friday.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting thing. Or maybe not all that interesting. Only to me, perhaps. When we used to do the radio show, TV show in the studio, I always look forward to Friday. Friday was always, you know, like, okay, it's the end of the week. The weekend's coming. Used to go in. I was in a good mood. I think you were in a good mood. Blah, 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 blah. Now we do this. It's like every day's the same.
Well, and let's face it, the old format of the radio show, Bob, was that Monday to Thursday, you talked to six or seven people.
Yeah.
And on Friday, it was you and your pals sitting around shooting the...
Well, it was phone calls for the first hour for me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the round table for the last 2 hours.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's something to that. But I enjoyed the rest of the week just as much as Fridays. It was the fact that it was Friday.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's COVID. It just doesn't feel like the end of the week.
Well, you're not going, you know, you're not going out to our favorite steakhouse for a steak tonight like you used to, you know?
Well, I might be going somewhere tonight. You don't know. There's still a few places open.
There are?
Sure.
That you can sit down? You can sit down?
Oh, yeah. I was out last week.
I thought we had rules in Ontario.
Well, you got to be on a patio.
Well, it's minus 13.
I'm telling you, there's a spot that I know you know of that's in our hood.
Yeah.
Went last week. I had to take my coat off, almost took my sweater off. Oh. It was so hot in there.
Well, and then you can smoke out there too. So that's good.
Well, no, you got to go outside of that space.
Okay. All right.
But it's completely, it's all plasticked off again. And
yeah, oh, I know. It is what it is.
Anyway, we're going to talk hockey here, I guess.
Maybe a little football.
Yeah, maybe. And a little media as well. Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News will join us. His take on the Bills playing this weekend. And Bruce Garriock of the Ottawa Sun. Together, again, have they been together before?
No.
Oh. Together for the first time. We'll commence with the festivities after these messages. It's McCowan, it's Shannon. We are back with you. We are joined by a couple of hockey pucks who cover two of the truly great teams in the National Hockey League.
they have their challenges, Bob. They have their challenges.
Last time I was on with Sakaris. Now I'm on with Harrington.
Yeah.
Hey, and they were great teams.
Back when when Vancouver couldn't beat anybody, they would lose an inner squad game.
2007, they were great teams. 2006, they were great teams. There you go.
Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, Bruce Garriock of the Ottawa Sun are with us. All right. Now, this whole conversation is probably going to be hockey stuff, and that's all well and good. But before we start, Harrington, how passionate are you about your Buffalo Bills and their chances against Kansas City this weekend?
Well, I love the game just as a fan. I think it's a fascinating game to see. Can they avenge last year's playoff loss? Can they win in Kansas City twice in the same season? And really, there was a big story in the Buffalo News today, and it's a very interesting dilemma. Is it a step-back season for the Bills if they lose this game? Yeah, it's one round early. They didn't get to the Super Bowl. They were a favorite, but they did win the division twice. But they got rid of the New England ghost finally last week. It's Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, and whichever guy plays better is going to win. But I think it's the game of the weekend by far. And let's be honest, whoever wins this game is representing the AFC in the Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, you'd have to think so, but...
Hold on. I mean, I picked Tennessee about 7 weeks ago.
Yeah, well, but that was before Derrick Henry got hurt, got back. You don't know what he's going to be like. The Bills should have had them in Tennessee the first time. I think Buffalo and Kansas City are clearly the favorite. Whoever emerges from this
game, I agree.
Even going to Tennessee would be the favorite.
Has Buffalo got the defense to do it, though?
It's a big problem. How does their secondary play against Kansas City without Tre'Davious White? I just question whether Kansas City is really going to lose to Buffalo at home twice in the same year. And they're a different team than when Buffalo beat them earlier in the year. They've really become the best team in the conference. But the Bills were sunk and written off by a lot of people. And all props to them for taking care of business, winning against New England on the road to win the division, rolling them in the playoff, and getting back to this point.
And you do have to wonder if there will be some psychological letdown after the perfect game they played against the Patriots.
Yeah, and the Kansas City Chiefs will defend the Buffalo Bills better than the Patriots did. I don't think I'm going out on a limb by saying that.
Because I felt like, Bob, do you feel in like a way that was kind of the for the Buffalo Bills fans, it was their moment of getting past Ottawa, the Ottawa Senators getting past the Toronto Maple Leafs. Do you know what I mean? Like, well, I kind of felt that way a little bit for the Bills on that one.
I mean, yeah, there's some truth in that. I mean, all you have to do is look at the lengthy history of the matchups between those two teams and the New England owned Buffalo. Now, mind you, New England had that Brady guy as their quarterback and, you know, a championship team, one of the great teams in the history of the National Football League. So losing to New England on a regular basis was just did they lose to New England more than the Jets did or the Dolphins did? Probably, maybe, but probably not by a lot. Everybody lost to New England.
Well, but they lost at key times to the Patriots too. That was the other thing.
But the Buffalo Bills have not had a championship caliber football team until the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Am I lying, Mike?
No, you're correct. And I mean, this game also was very cathartic for people here because this was the first home playoff game in front of a full house since Jim Kelly's last game in 1996.
There you go.
The two games last year were 6,000 people. So it was a cathartic moment. They rolled the Patriots. The fans were back. And it's going to be something people remember all year, even if they lose to Kansas City.
And let's face it, Kansas City could be, you know, if they do all get all the way to the Super Bowl, that's three consecutive Super Bowls for them that they've been to. The Bills just might have gone from facing one dynasty to another.
Sure. You know, I mean, that's the thing, is that they are still the team to beat until somebody beats them in the AFC.
Well, anybody know what the over-under on this game is?
By any chance? Pretty high. I mean, the weather is supposed to be clear. There's not supposed to be any issues with the weather, so it should be pretty high.
The weather doesn't seem to harm the Bills these days. I mean, after last week, holy smokes.
Well, I think this is going to be – I think it's going to be in the 60s.
60s for sure.
I mean, I don't know that both teams can score 30, but one of them is going to score more than 30. I think that's a given. And then it's just up to the other. And the defenses are vulnerable here. Two great offenses and two defenses that – are not bad by any stretch of the imagination, but may get steamrolled, kind of like New England did last week. Anyway, that's enough football talk. So let me start with this rather than get into specifics here. You guys have both covered teams in the NHL, the Sabres and the Senators, who have been bad for an extended period of time. I'm trying to be diplomatic, but there's no other way to say it.
That's Eugene on line two, Bob.
Yeah, well, put him on hold.
Yeah.
is it easier as, you know, as ink-stained wretches who have to come up with a story, you know, almost every day, is it easier to cover a bad team than a good team? Is it easier to write a story about failure rather than success?
No. The biggest thing is I want a Stanley Cup team, or I want a tire fire. And I've had a three-alarm fire for a long time. I don't want in the middle. I don't want 80 points. I don't want 500. Give me very good or very bad any day of the week, and I'll do just fine.
It's easier to write. Gary.
Well, I've always said that I am going to retire after the 5 years of unparalleled success. So my clock keeps going here, right? Like, I thought, you know, I'd be heading towards retirement after this season. The clock on the 5 years starts again in 2022, 23. No, it's not easy to cover a team that constantly loses. And there are always good things about teams, and there are good players. But I think the issue is when you can't see any hope. I do think in both situations now, I think Buffalo's kind of rewound the clock again on this, but I think in both situations there are players there that are whole, but it doesn't make it easier by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, so when your team is losing regularly, is it hard to come up with new angles, new stories? Because you feel like you're writing the same thing over and over again, just changing a couple paragraphs here and there?
not in this town, not with this team. They have picked creative ways to lose for 10 years running. But, you know, the biggest thing, really, the toughest part the last 2 years coming up with angles is simply the inability to work a locker room and talk to different guys. Yeah. That's been the biggest problem. It would be no problem. And, I mean, I covered the tank years. It was no problem coming up with different angles. Guys cycle through the locker room. You lose games in different ways. There's different reasons. But it's been more difficult simply – the inability to talk to a lot of different guys has really been what's held me up more. And to Bruce's point, there is no franchise that has ever sold hope like the Buffalo Sabres have in the last 10 years. It is really, through this entire time, very rarely ever felt completely hopeless here. You know, there has always been the tanking, Jack Eichel's career going forward, the improvement they did have. You know, the last year was kind of the most hopeless season, but that was the COVID year and it was tough for everyone. They had the Kruger situation. Eichel got hurt. And where are we now? We're in full blown hope again, because I really do this time believe they might have something. I mean, Owen Power looks like the best player in college hockey this year. He's theirs. He's coming as soon as this April when his season is over. They've never sold hope like they are now. I really think they might finally have something, but it's still the hope wagon going here.
There's lots of hope in Ottawa too, right, Bruce?
Well, and that's the thing I was going to say, you know, at least the Senators were honest about the route that they were taking in 2018 when they went down this road, when Pierre Dorion and Eugene Melnyk met in Barbados and they said, look, we're going to tear this team thing down. There's going to be some pain here. But we feel like in the end, there's going to be gain. And if you look at their core players, Thomas Chabot, Brady Tkachuk, Josh Norris, Drake Batherson, Tim Stützle, they've got Jake Sanderson coming from U.S. College, Eric Brännström, who was the key piece in the Mark Stone trade, is finally starting to show some of his potential. Absolutely, the pieces are here. But the one thing I have liked here that I don't think Buffalo has done is they have not, you know, lots of people take shots at Eugene Melnyk. He's not changed his general manager. He's stuck with Pierre Dorion through thick and thin. Pierre Dorion has done a good job getting the assets in place with his hockey operations staff. There are no complaints about this club's amateur scouting staff. And this is where, you know, I look at Buffalo. When they fired Tim Murray, they gave someone else an excuse to lose. Then they fired Jason Botterill and gave someone else an excuse to lose. That hasn't been done here. There's a clear path forward. And that's the thing I don't think we've seen in Buffalo. Maybe now they'll stick with Kevin Adams, but they're going to have to stomach what's going to take place with Kevin Adams for that to happen.
I want to go to these clandestine meetings. The Senators have them in Barbados. The Sabres have them in Boca Raton and decide the history of their franchises.
So actually, you guys have mentioned two names. Buffalo as a city and Ottawa as a city might be more fascinated with the Olympic Winter Games than any other two when you think that Sanderson's going to play for the Americans and Power's going to play for Canada. That might be a fun angle for both franchises, but it also dovetails the conversation we're having to an event that occurred earlier this week in Edmonton. And that was, when you talk about not having access and not being able to talk to the players, it was a very public viewed by more than a million people, a very public argument between a venerable writer, a good friend in Jim Matheson, and Leon Draisaitl. What did you make of that, Bruce?
My take on it is, and I could be completely wrong here, that would have never happened to the late Red Fisher. Because you know what would have happened? One of the Montreal Canadiens, Bob Gainey or Larry Robinson, if it would have taken Leon Draisaitl aside and said, don't you ever treat anybody that way, show some respect. And I thought it was, look, Jim Matheson should have stopped with the, he shouldn't have said, why are you so whatever with me?
Pissy, that,
yeah. He should have stopped. And that didn't look good. But to me, that's an issue of Zoom and the relationship between the media and the players right now. You know, and I know we've all been in dressing rooms, guys. Like if you can talk one-on-one with a player, you can talk it through. And There was no opportunity there, Mike, for Jim to talk it through.
No context either. I mean, everyone sees the clip. They don't know what was said earlier in the interview. They don't know what was said last week. They don't know the relationship from two years ago. Everybody sees the clip. And I've been there. You know, I had a moment a couple of years ago with Sam Reinhart, and the clip still lives. And what people don't see on the clip is 20 seconds after the clip ends, I asked him another question and he answered fine. The next night in New York, he scores two goals. I ask him five questions in a row that are fine. But you have that YouTube moment that lives in infamy that now Jim Matheson, a guy who's in the honored members section of the, you know, Hall of Fame, the Elmer Ferguson winner, has to live with. And that's the problem with it. But these things don't happen if you're not on Zoom, you're not in press conference rooms, you're able to go up to a guy, build a relationship better. And there are guys in the Buffalo Sabres who I have never had a conversation with. Just, hey, how you doing? What's going on? Somebody asks you at the Bills. Players I've never had one with. We haven't been in the locker room now in 22 months. And that's a real problem in all sports.
I just said to someone today, Bob, Matt Murray's been here since October 2020. I've never met him. You know, he sat at a podium. I've asked him questions.
Right.
But, and people tell me that Matt Murray's a really good guy. I can't tell you that because I don't know.
Well, I guess I have a slightly different opinion.
But Bob, you don't go to locker rooms. You don't go to dressing rooms.
What for? It's a smelly place and it's their place. And I don't want to be I don't want to be in their footing. You know,
you don't even like to talk to them.
No, I don't like to talk to athletes. And I mean, but I will say this much. I get both sides of this. I think this is much ado about nothing. Dreisaitl's team has lost a million out of a million in two games.
Right.
And he's pissed. And he's not pissed at Matheson necessarily or at any one individual. He's pissed at the whole world. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to be sitting at that podium. Somebody told him to go there. He probably didn't want to be there. I mean, I'm sure he didn't want to be there. And he was in a bad freaking mood. I get that. I mean, we've all been through that. Matheson, on the other hand, figures he deserved better than one word slough off answers. So he confronted him. He said, how come you're in a pissy mood? And of course that set Dreisaitl off even worse. We've seen arguments between players and reporters 100 times worse.
I've seen wrestling matches.
Exactly.
Hey, I was in the hallway the night that Dominic had with Roy McGregor. We were in the hallway when Dominic Hasek went after the late Jim Kelly after a playoff game. It happens.
Well, Kelly and I think, as you guys know, Kelly was a co-host on this program for a long period of time, and he and I became very close friends, and we talked a lot about that issue. And there was no longstanding, you know, repercussions from it. Shit happens.
No, but do you know, can you imagine if we had video of that confrontation?
No, but and you're right. And you know what? The only thing, and I never liked this guy, so I profess this by saying I never liked Pierre Gauthier. I thought he was one of the worst people I've ever dealt with as a general manager since I've covered this team in 30 years. Like, just a terrible person. But here's the thing I would say. The thing I really didn't like about when Pierre Gauthier jumped in the middle of that was when he said, don't hit him, Dom. It's not worth it. he's not worth it. As if to say, Jim Kelly's not a human being, so don't hit him.
Right.
By the way, you're just mad that Pierre would limit the one cookie per meal. That's all you're mad. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just in charge of the one cookie and the one hot dog, little Bruce.
Come on. Sure. Come on.
Look,
there's a guy who I went to ask him something one time. He said, what would you like, Bruce? I said, how about some respect?
Yeah.
It's a two-way street. It was pointed out earlier that this is a social media phenomenon. And that's really all it is. This has escalated because you can put almost any crap on social media and you'll be shocked at how many people wind up.
Okay.
Much ado about nothing. It was a minor skirmish at best.
I think you're bang on, Bob, but both of you guys, I think you, Bruce, you touched on, you know, Bob Gainey or somebody from the organization would go to the player. Should the Oilers have said something to someone, and should there have been a a coming to Jesus moment after the fact?
Absolutely.
What would you expect, Mike?
I would expect the PR staff would have talked to Dreisaitl and probably even arrange a little meeting in the hall with Maddie about it. I mean, that's embarrassing for the entire organization. Yes. You know, that's not the way you treat a guy who's covered the team for 50 years, who covered the team when they were good, when they had legendary players, not this garbage now. So absolutely they should. That's not the way as a player you show any kind of leadership, whether it's a good question or not. And you know what? We've all asked lousy questions in interviews. Maddie's asked lousy questions. Everybody does. It should not have gotten to that point. But like Bob said, we've all seen much worse than that. And it just happens that it was captured on the video and goes mm-hmm. everywhere. And, you know, it started, frankly, with Tim and Sid's Twitter feed. You know, so one thing about it is media outlets shouldn't be, you know, bringing down other media outlets just to get a lot of likes in their Twitter feed and a lot of cute videos.
But that's really what the media is about today.
Well, that's what certain outlets are. And that's what, you know, things are on Twitter. And it was unnecessary.
And I'm not saying that this was Tim and Sid, but I thought that was one very good point that Burnside made in his column for dailyfaceoff.com, where the media on Twitter who curry to their followers, and we see a lot of this in our industry, Mike, and we're not two of these people, and neither is John, who curry to their followers and just say, yeah, this is really bad about Matheson, because they're trying to make sure that their followers don't get mad at them. And that goes on a lot.
It does. And I mean, the thing about Maddie's situation in that spot, I get it.
Yeah.
We've all been there. It could be me. You don't want to create a YouTube moment. Sometimes it happens. You know, I just think that one got blown way out of whack.
And it did. And you're right. It was exacerbated because there isn't that ability to go around the corner in the room to say, hey, what's your beef with me? Right. You know, and that can't right now, that can't happen. And guys, here's the other question. I'm not sure it ever will happen again. I'm not sure we're going to go back in the rooms ever again. How about that?
Well, I hope you're wrong.
But I want to be wrong, but you know, that doesn't mean.
And I know the NHL has said multiple times, where MLB has not and the NFL has not, the NHL has said, our plan is to go back to pre-pandemic media access. Now, whether it actually happens, I don't know. But they've said that, and other leagues have not.
You know, Mark Messier last night on ESPN said something very interesting about it. And he put it in the context of being a player. And it was the best thing he said on ESPN this season. He said, when you're standing and you're sitting at the dais with the microphone in front of you, you are talking to your season ticket holders. You are talking to the people who buy tickets, and you better understand that every time a reporter asks you questions. And that was something that obviously Glenn Sather taught him, or one of the other veteran players on the early Oilers taught him. And it really resonated with me. It made a ton of sense.
Sure. Well, Leon Draisaitl was just talking to Jim Matheson there and forgot the entire
season. Yeah. Right.
And you know, the other thing is, John, and you know this from your days with Hockey Night in Canada and being around the forum on Saturday nights, that Jim Matheson is the Red Fisher of Edmonton.
Yeah. Oh, no. Listen, I view Jim as a friend, and I have utmost respect for what he's done. And I also feel, as I feel for you guys, I feel your frustration in trying to do your jobs. That's the difficult, to do your job. So that's the hard part.
You know me, I never try to be the contrarian.
Yeah, but that's part. Oh, yeah. You've always gone along.
Never.
And it is still your show.
Yeah. Just the fact that you haven't spoken for 10 minutes. Go.
Well, I'm in shock by you three numbskulls and the way you're reacting to this. Dreisaitl, he was pissy. He was pissed off. If I'm a fan, I don't want him spewing all the media school crap that all these other athletes spew, which is why I stopped talking to athletes, except if I can get them one-on-one and I think that they have something to say, or they're retired. Most of the nonsense that comes from news conferences, which you guys participate in, is worthless drivel. Screw what Messier said. I don't want to hear, you know, some poppycock that I don't believe. I want to see some real emotion. This team has lost 16 of 18 or whatever the hell it was. Uh-huh. I don't blame Dreisaitl for being pissed off. I want him to be pissed off.
All he's got to say, Bob, is I'm the star player. This is what Jack Eichel did all the time in Buffalo. I have to be better. I have to be better. I'm the star player. I have to take more responsibility for my game. If Dreisaitl says that, we're not having
well, Bob, here's the other thing. No, nobody said, and I don't, nobody said that Leon had to be you giving drivel. I'm mad that Leon's mad, but I'd like to, you know, what you need to try to do is
I like
it. Leon's mad and he should be ticked off the way his team played, but then you should try to explain that. And why are they playing bad? That's part of the job, Bob. Now, it is part of the job description of being a professional athlete. It is part of the job description.
Well, you can say that all you want. You've said it three times now, as you usually do when you want to make a point. You just keep repeating the same thing over and over again.
Why are you so pissy?
I'm pissy because I'm talking to idiots. That's why. I would like to talk to somebody want to talk to somebody that agrees with me, because nobody ever agrees with me. And then we'd have no freaking show.
Yeah.
But I think both guys were absolutely right in the way they handled it. Matheson was right to ask him why he was so pissy, but I understand why Dreisaitl didn't back down and then got up and walked off the dais. So what? All this does is create stories for people that had nothing to do with it. You two numbskulls at the bottom of the screen had nothing to do with this thing and could write 800 words in 90 seconds about this, the relative merits of it, pro or con.
Yeah.
It's just so much to do about nothing. At the end of the day, nobody was at fault. I understand where Dreisaitl was coming from, and I understand where Matheson was coming from.
Yeah.
Period. End of story. I don't think there's a right or a wrong.
Okay. New topic.
All right. Go ahead. Well, no. First, we'll take a break.
Okay.
Because I'm exhausted from all that talking. Yeah. With Harrington and Garriott, we'll see if we can conjure up something more interesting or more controversial after these messages. We are back, and hopefully the three numbskulls I'm with have calmed down. Mike Harrington.
Hold on. Bruce you Garriott. Were the one who was more John angry Shannon. Than the three of us.
I wasn't really angry. I was just trying to make sure I got my point across. I really couldn't care less about it, other than it gave us 10 minutes of conversation here that we otherwise wouldn't have had. We'd have to make up some nonsense that that nobody cares about. Since we're on Edmonton and you guys are looking from afar, I mean, look at Sabres, Senators, relatively low expectations, and they're achieving them. Edmonton, on the other hand, high expectations, amazing start to the year. A few weeks in, there probably weren't very many, none of us probably, who could have anticipated that what has happened would have happened. Nothing even close to it. I actually thought there were real signs here. This is the breakthrough. And this team has bad teams go through losing streaks. I didn't think good teams go through little spells. This is more than a spell. This is a freaking disaster.
Yeah.
Two things. Number one, how come? Number two, can you fix this? Or is this thing inexorably broken? Harrington, to you first.
This is the Titanic about to hit the iceberg here. I just literally a couple hours ago even tweeted about it. They're 2-11-2 in their last 15. They're last in the league in points. They're last in goals against average. They're last on the PK. It all comes back to three simple words. Make a save. Mm-hmm. They get no saves. They get no bailout whatsoever from their goaltending, whether they're on the PK, whatever it is. And the fact of the matter is, especially recently, McDavid and Dreisaitl have not been very good. But I watched most of this game against Florida last night, and they played really well in the first period, and they quit. And I hate saying professional athletes quit. That team quit. They lost 6-0. They gave up. They ran up the white flag. They were leading the league on December 1st. I can't imagine ever seeing a team go this far the other way this quickly. They are completely broken.
And it all comes down to goaltending. And my sense would be that that at this point, it's up to Ken Holland to make a move to try and find a goaltender, because your team is broken if you can't get saves. We saw that with Ottawa in Pittsburgh last night. They lose 6-4. Well, they couldn't get a save from either of their goaltenders. And I was kind of thinking maybe if Anton Forsberg could have a good game last night, that perhaps that might be a direction that Edmonton would go in, because they signed him once and lost him on waivers. Mm-hmm. You know, I just think that it's a whole combination of things. But I do think that Dave Tippett will end up paying the price. But I think if you can't get a save, you're behind the eight ball immediately. It doesn't matter what kind of talent you have up front.
Yeah, the
other thing. Sorry.
Go ahead, Mike. No, you go.
The biggest thing with Edmonton is, because it's Edmonton, if this continues and goes off the rails and they don't make the playoffs, are we having the same conversation about Connor McDavid in May or sooner that we had about Jack Eichel last May?
Whether he wants to stay or not.
Absolutely. He wants to stay. Whether he's going to say, get me out of here.
Yeah, he's going to have to make, if this is the case, and you talk about, you know, the season ending the last week of April and May, they're not in the playoffs. He's going to have to make a statement that he wants to stay in order to quell any type of, you know, really, really busy summer.
I think we all have mutual respect for Ken Holland. I mean, he is an experienced and quality general manager. He's not some guy we're trying to evaluate. I mean, he's been evaluated. Why hasn't he been able to make a deal for a goaltender? Is this all budgetary? I mean, why hasn't he taken, and we should probably ask him, why hasn't he taken more chances? Has he got nobody in his system that he can call up?
Two summers ago, they were in the bidding for Jacob Markstrom. They were in that final bidding for Markstrom. And I don't know exactly the numbers or the term, but they lost Markstrom to the Calgary Flames. Last summer, they were in a bidding war for Darcy Kuemper with Colorado. And that changed when Philip Grubauer got drafted or got signed as a free agent in Seattle. So
interesting, John. Asking is, why hasn't he done something over the last 60 days when it has been clear that goaltending is their Achilles heel?
They don't have any cap space, Bob. They don't. I mean, everybody can sit here and say, well, let's Marc-Andre Fleury. Well, first of all, Fleury has to waive.
Well, that was where I was going to go. Yeah.
Fleury has to waive his no move deal to Edmonton. But I mean, they would have to shed players and money in order to try to get Fleury under the cap. Those are issues that are not simple to fix. They are not simple to fix.
So taking the risk
is one that he's having a difficult time doing.
He got Duncan Keith instead of getting a goalie. You know, to me, to go into this season thinking your goaltenders were going to be Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen is his first mistake right there. And that's been proven out, even though they were playing well at the beginning. I get it. And his prospect goalie, Bob said, who else can he bring up? Stuart Skinner hasn't been much. And now he needs to go outside. And like you say, John, how is he going to fit anybody under the cap in that roster right now?
You sit here and say, well, the solutions are going to have to come from within. But it's scary to think that the solutions of a team with that kind of save percentage and those kind of numbers that they have in net, they're just going to suddenly, Mike Smith's going to wake up one day and find the answers.
Well, and the problem also is that if you took what Mike Smith did last year during the regular season, you'd say, hey, we're okay. Yeah. You know, Mike Smith had a great season. Mike Smith could have, for, you know, three quarters of the season, been in the Vezina discussion. Had a brutal.
But Mike
playoff.
Smith is not 25 years old.
No, that's right. Well, and now he's
going to be able to
prone.
Do last this year what he did last year. He is at the age where the wheels are going to come off at any moment, and you better be prepared for that. It may not happen this year. It may not happen next year. But at some point, it's going to happen. Right. And guess what?
It's happened. Yeah.
Ready for it. Or they weren't prepared to acknowledge. This goaltending stuff is just, John knows this. You guys probably know this about me. It just drives me crazy. Everybody in the National Hockey League, everybody around hockey, all four of us acknowledge the same thing. Gary Ock, you mentioned it. If you don't have goaltending, you got nothing. If you don't have a quarterback in the NFL, you aren't going to win. Those are two commonalities. Baseball, you need a bunch of things. Basketball, you need a couple of stars or three stars. In hockey, you must have one thing, a decent, at least, or better than decent goaltender, or you have no chance. And to the fact that, and I know the explanation, I know what you guys are going to say. The fact that goaltenders are not the number one player drafted every year is shocking to me. Wouldn't you be shocked, Harrington, if a something other than a quarterback was drafted number one almost every year?
I mean, it doesn't work that way, but you're right. To me, the goaltenders are really underrepresented in the first round, but the reason is the amount of time it takes to groom them.
That's what they say.
But they're right for the most part. Very rarely do you have a Fleury come in. Very rarely do you have a Spencer Knight come in a year or so after they're picked and play in the NHL. And a lot of these GMs, like, I can't draft a prospect goalie and wait 4 years. I'm going to get fired by that.
That's right.
Well, but they'll say the same thing about a defenseman. The defenseman won't be good till he's 24 or 26 years old.
Yeah, but if you're in the high in the first round, that guy's playing within a year.
Well, I get that, but my goaltender would play. I mean, why can't an 18-year-old goaltender play? Well,
I agree with you.
John's shaking his head there,
because history will tell you that it takes you 4 or 5 years to groom a goaltender to play at the NHL level. It does. It takes you 4 or 5 years. That's a fact, Bob.
How many 18-year-old goaltenders are given a chance to play?
Well, and you know what? You beat me to it, Bob, because that was, to be devil's advocate with Mike and John, we haven't really seen an 18 or 19-year-old goaltender get an opportunity.
I rest my case.
Right?
For a long time.
Who was the last young goaltender who had that kind of opportunity? I can't.
Rick DiPietro.
Yeah.
And
who got a 10-year or 12-year contract?
I was just going to say, he got a 12-year deal. Worked out pretty good.
Worked out for him, right.
I think they're paying him until 2035 as well. But how does that work?
$4.5 million a year, and he was the highest paid goaltender in the NHL, if I'm not mistaken.
For a 15-year contract, it was.
I think what we're finding, though, is there really aren't 64 great goalies in the world, because most teams don't have two good ones, and a lot of teams don't have one good one. And that's another problem. All the way down, you could take the argument to youth hockey and the cost of playing hockey and the cost of being a goalie. Parents steer their kids away from being goalies.
Well, not only that, I mean, if you're gonna talk about minor hockey or youth hockey, the way you put it, Mike, is why would you put your kid in a position of there's only two of those guys on a team,
right?
Versus 18 skaters.
there's a lot to it. He can get hurt more, and there's a lot to it. And there just aren't even just take starting goalies. Are there really 32 good goalies to all be a starter for every NHL team?
Well, are there 32 good quarterbacks in the NFL?
No.
But they draft them at the top because they don't know. Would you like to go through the list of early first round quarterbacks who either failed miserably or never even got a shot because they weren't good. Most of them played for the Cleveland Browns.
I know.
Yeah. Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold got drafted before Josh Allen. Don't you think the Cleveland Browns and especially the New York Jets have some remorse about that?
Oh,
bingo. But they keep doing it because you need that guy. In the NHL, they make this argument like Shannon, the hockey puck, says, it takes so long to develop them, it's not worth doing because I'll be gone. Well, you better change that attitude. I mean, if there's a McDavid available, I get it. But there isn't a McDavid every year. And the number two, number three, number four, number five picks who never draft hockey goalies, they're not getting a McDavid. They're getting a guy who's probably going to be good but may not be great. And if you draft him before you draft a goaltender, assuming you need one, you're an idiot. Period. End of story.
Now, there aren't just like there aren't McDavids every year in the draft. There aren't necessarily good goalies in the draft every year either, Bob. So that's just a fact. Let's face it, it's not like college football.
Craig Button did have one rated in the top 12 this year, didn't he? In the was the Russian kid, and where'd he go? He went fairly early, didn't he?
He went to Nashville, I think. Didn't he?
Yeah.
So, Spencer Knight was a good choice recently.
But he went to Nashville, yeah. And they're going to wait 3 years for him to come over.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's all a maturation. I mean, it's difficult to put an 18-year-old player, goaltender, in that position and expect him to thrive. Look at Carter Hart. Yeah. Carter Hart's a good example right now.
I guess what Bob is saying, give him baptism by fire, right?
100%. They do it with quarterbacks. Yeah. I mean, there was a time when a high drafted quarterback would sit on the bench for a year or two, and never get a sniff. Mm-hmm. Not anymore. Now, if you don't play week one, you're playing by week six, because the team's got to find out whether they got something or they don't have something. And you're not going to win a championship probably with a 21 or 22 year old quarterback who you drafted in the first round, but you might win one in year two or three. And the Buffalo Bills are a perfect example. When did your quarterback get his first start?
Right away.
It was after the Nathan Peterman disaster.
Oh, that's right.
It was a few games in.
They
didn't have the quarterback for 22 years. The Buffalo Sabres have not had the goalie since Ryan Miller got traded in 2014. They're still trying to find him. They have some prospects they like, but here we are 8 years later, and they're still looking for that guy to play 55 games and lead him.
But memory serves me, Ryan Miller, when he got drafted out of Michigan State, he didn't play right away.
No, he went back to the A, and then he played at the A during the lockout year, but he probably would have played the lockout year in the NHL if there had been NHL hockey that year.
I mean, it's funny, you talk about the quarterback comparison. I look at the two best quarterbacks in the NFL right now. Aaron Rodgers sat for 3 years behind Brett Favre, and Tom Brady waited for Drew Bledsoe to screw up in order to get an opportunity. So, and their longevity speaks to, if you can be patient, it can pay off too. So I don't think there's one simple way. The reality of what's going on with goaltending is that 18-year-old goaltenders are not ready to play in the National
League. How do you know? Based on what evidence? Based on the theory that 18-year-old goaltenders aren't ready. Because that's what hockey guys will tell you over and over again. And then they bitch and complain because we don't have a goaltender. And they say you can't draft a goaltender early.
I guess the thing is, you'd have to find a general manager, Bob, who's got great stability, who would be willing to go that route. And I don't know that you've got anybody who's got the stones, exactly. I mean, here in Ottawa, and Craig Anderson spent a decade in the net, right? And they went out and got a two-time Stanley Cup champion, and Matt Murray thinking, okay, this guy's going to help us get to the next level. It's been anything but since he got here.
But they had how many 18, 19, and 20-year-olds playing up front?
It's lots.
Instead of having a 40-year-old Anderson or another veteran come in, take one of your kids. Give him the same opportunity at 18, 19 that you're giving your forwards or your defensemen, and have a little confidence in them. You know, how many games were the Ottawa Senators going to win the last 2 years if they had Carey Price in goal? Or whoever you think is the best goaltender in the NHL. Five more in a year?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And what would what difference would that have made? Zero. Would have made no difference whatsoever. Instead, take one of those kids. Do like you do with a quarterback. You knew that when you draft a quarterback, that when you put him in, we're not going to win right away, but the kid's going to learn. But we want hockey people want that. Make sure that kid learns in the American Hockey League or stays in junior until he's 20 or 21.
Or now
then gets to go to the American Hockey League.
Yeah.
Why? Because he's not good enough? No, theory. We don't do that.
I think there are enough reasons and enough evidence to support that theory, Bob.
What, you've named one, DiPietro. In the history of the National Hockey League.
Buffalo wanted to play Luukkonen this year, and in training camp they had him. They were thinking it would be Luukkonen and Craig Anderson in Buffalo.
Yeah.
And Luukkonen just wasn't very good. And they played him in the preseason and they sent him back and he learned a little and he came back. He's been better now. Now he's hurt. But I think, he's up to 22. He's not 18. it is hard. And I get Bob's point about you never see it. And the answer, why do you never see it? Well, you just don't. Well, there's not a great reason. It's just, you just don't.
Well, you look at a team like the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, Thatcher Demko has become a really good goalie, but it took him time to play this game. You know, it took finishing in college hockey in Boston and going to Utica in the American League. And now he's come at the appropriate time after they didn't re-sign Markstrom and he's filled the void. It took time. And it's worked out. Then you take another high draft pick of the Canucks and Mikey DiPietro, who they threw in early, and he's been a disaster. I mean, there's lots of evidence.
And just as there are lots of quarterbacks who are drafted high that we don't even remember the names of, who will never see the light of day.
They only played for the Cleveland
failed
Browns.
Quickly. Well, it just makes no sense to me whatsoever. This is the hockey mentality that drives me crazy, is that this is the way we've been doing it for so long, and we're going to keep doing it.
No, Bob,
and there is no explanation for it other than theoretically it takes, you got to take time.
It's a lot easier for defensemen. It's a lot easier to play forward. It's a lot easier to play defense as an 18-year-old in the National Hockey League than it is to play goal, period.
So?
No, but the issue with goals, right? Like your last line of defense, and if you make a mistake,
yeah,
it's for everyone to see.
Well, I'd rather
it is the one position that you. It seems, Bob, and you're on the right track. You got to pay your dues before you get your chance.
Same as quarterbacks, it's the same thing. And if I'm going to lose, I'd rather lose with an 18-year-old in goal who has a future than a 40-year-old who has nothing but a past. But general managers do that over and over and over again. Go and take guys who have been mediocre or failed and think you hope that they're a reclamation project. Or hang on to a guy like Smith, who's 40 years old, and hope, well, maybe he can still do it. Give the kid a chance. Now, Edmonton's in a tougher situation. They should have had an experienced goaltender because they had a team that might win. But the two teams that you're following should never have a goaltender over the age of 25, in my opinion. Never. It should always be a young guy, and the younger, the better. Anyway.
Which is why Bob's not a general manager in the National Hockey League.
I turned down that crummy job.
Oh, yeah, right.
Well, unless I got a 10-year contract.
Right.
In which case, I'd gobble it up. Is there anything we haven't discussed?
Well, what do you make of the new schedule, Bruce? What's going to happen?
Well, I mean, they're obviously, 50 games in 100 days. That's fine. Every second day, 10 back-to-backs for Ottawa. The thing I think they're most frustrated with was they thought when they got this new schedule that they'd be able to sell tickets. And the Buffalo Sabres are in town next Tuesday. Nobody in the rink. Connor McDavid will be here with 500 people. I just had a brief conversation with Eugene Melnyk last night. He's like, 500 people, why would I bother? You know, there's a huge level of frustration in Ontario with the rules around seating capacity.
And the biggest thing I'm watching for from Buffalo's end is the Heritage Classic. The announcement in Ontario, they're going to be able to go to full capacity maybe on March 14th. Oops, Heritage Classics on March 13th. Did they not know that when they made the rules? What's up with that? So we have to really see if there's going to be clarity on that, because there's not going to be a Heritage Classic this year unless they can play to a full house in Hamilton.
Yeah, I think that, it's interesting because there's going to be a World Cup soccer qualifier in Hamilton in a couple of weeks that is going to probably be at half capacity. So how many people, I don't know how many people were supposed to be in the stadium at Tim Hortons Field, Mike, for the hockey game, but let's say 40,000. Does it make sense to put 20,000 people in there for that day? And quite frankly, it probably doesn't at that point. And you'd also have to hope by the 14th of March or the 1st of March that the border will be open enough and easier enough to travel back and forth, that the Sabres can get at least a few Canadians across the border more often and easier, rather than having to take a test to come home.
But I and look, I'm not anti-vaxxer, not anti-mask or any of that kind of thing. I just think we're at the point where people should be able to make their own decisions as far as wanting to go to a hockey game or not wanting to go to a hockey game. And I just think it's ridiculous that you can have 500 people in the Pembroke Lumber Kings Memorial Complex, which seats 2,450, and you can have 500 in the 600,000 square foot Canadian Tire Center. To me, that makes no sense.
Well, most of this doesn't make any sense. And we could yak about it forever. We're not going to change any minds.
Maybe we should get Eugene on to talk about it, though. I'll be listening to that one.
Well, we'll ask the producer to do that. It's been a while since Melnick has been on this program.
Give me a heads up.
You know you'll be among the first. Boys, we love you, Chicky Baby, and we thank you very much for your time, as always, and we look forward to having the opportunity to chat again. All the best. Stay safe. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bob. John.
Mike Harrington, Bruce Garriock. We'll come back and wrap it after these messages. All right, we're almost done. Our thanks to Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, Bruce Garriock of the Ottawa Sun for being with us on the program. Do you have any final, parting shots?
Well, we didn't talk about Montreal and Tampa and the baseball, but we'll save that for next week.
Well, that was a little briefer than I thought it was going to be.
We don't have that much time, Bob.
Well, is there that much news on Tampa and Montreal?
Well, the fact that it can't happen, and Major League Baseball said it's not going to happen.
Well,
that's news enough.
Talk about it.
Well, I mean, I just think that Montreal's a Major League Baseball town and they deserve a team.
Well, the one thing I can tell you is St. Petersburg isn't a Major League Baseball town and they don't deserve a team. That's for sure. Whether
and
Montreal
they have
does,
one.
Well, people forgot about it or didn't pay attention to it. In any event, that's all upcoming in another week, another month. Stay safe and warm this weekend. It's chilly out there. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, we'll see you Monday. Goodbye, everybody.